This is Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Coming to you from the Circus Sportsbook here in downtown Las Vegas, I'm Scott Satterberg. It's Cashing Out here on Christmas evening into your Friday morning on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Joining me in studio is NBA handicapper Mackenzie Rivers from RJ Bell's Dream Preview Podcast and BetterDay.com. And I brought Mackenzie here because I wanted to see him in his nice green Christmas suit, but also because the NBA is synonymous with Christmas Day.
Yes,
as
sir.
Much as the NFL wants to try and take claim to Christmas, it is still the unofficial start to the NBA regular season. So, Mac, let's break down what we saw here on Christmas Day, and we'll start with that early game between the New York Knicks and the Cleveland Cavaliers, in which the Knicks come back from 17 points down to win against Cleveland 126-124. What was your biggest takeaway from that game?
I think the Cavs season's over. I think their contention as Eastern Conference contenders is over because so much was put into that game. They were without Evan Mobley, but they had Darius Garland finally playing well. They were coming off a win with the Pelicans, and everything was resurrected. Everything was all right. We do have two elite guards we can play through. We do have balance on our team. We can play defense against the best teams. And to have that unravel for Kenny Atkinson's squad, they had lost, 18 games all of last year to have 14 losses already. I mean, I've already downgraded them 2 points, but I think psychologically, I don't think they recover from this. I mean, I think the Knicks could have afforded a loss. They already won the cup. They already proved their team to be at least as good as the Pistons and the best team in the East. They could have had this loss and lived with it. I think Cleveland's in trouble.
Yeah, Mobley comes back after missing 2 weeks and surprisingly comes back in this game. He was a +4, though, for the entire game. So in a game where, you know, you had a 17-point lead for a guy who, you know, played minutes off the bench here, did finish with 14 points. They were showing a couple of replays early on of Mobley, and, you know, Doris Burke was going wild with Ryan Rucco about Mobley playing. But this was, to me, as much more about the New York Knicks than about the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Okay, you had the opposite takeaway.
Yeah,
because I said this cap, it's all about the Cavs.
So you want to go negative on
yes,
the Cavs.
Yes.
I mean, I'm more of a positive guy, Mac.
Right.
I want to go positive on the Knicks here. The Knicks showed the ability to win games when they are not at their best. And I think it's a scary proposition for the rest of the Eastern Conference because when the Knicks are at their best, they are the best team in the Eastern Conference right now. You look at what happened in this game. Their comeback in the fourth quarter was when Mitchell Robinson was on the floor and Karl Anthony Towns was not. You had a guy that contributes zero to you offensively. Zero. He doesn't take any shots. He was 0-for-1 in the game, and he missed those two free throws late with like a minute or so left in the game because they fouled him, right? And then they took him out of the game, put Cat back in. But you have a guy that just his only purpose is to get rebounds. Think about how many NBA teams can play 4-on-5 offensively and come back from you like the Knicks can do. I don't know if there's many teams that can do that.
No, and it's kind of resemblance of the Derrick Rose Bulls in the fact that they can have defensive players on the floor the way the Thunder can because they have that offensive genius in Jalen Brunson getting the ball on every possession. It's funny that it's happening against Cleveland because they were that defensive, like, rugged team under J.B. Bickerstaff, and they had this offensive transformation, and now they're neither. And that's why I think, I was already very positive on the Knicks. I already think they're the team in the East. I told you a couple weeks ago, 4-1 to win the East was a great bet.
Yep.
Still is at +250.
Tyler Kolek, +24 off the bench, drilled 4-of-5 from 3-point range. What a moment for Tyler Kolek. They were chanting his name at the Garden here in this one. The game does go over, so it is now 4 straight overs for the Knicks on Christmas, and this is just, it's just a new Knicks team. This isn't the old defensive-minded Knicks here. It's Jalen Brunson, it's Karl Anthony Towns, it's a guy like Tyler Kolek shooting up threes now.
And they're 4-1 on Christmas, but they didn't cover. Now 4-10 ATS going back.
Ooh.
But they are winning these games on Christmas.
They are winning these games. Let's talk about the biggest surprise of the day, in my opinion, maybe to you as well.
Yeah.
The Spurs beating the Thunder 117-102. I texted you during the third quarter of this game because I did live bet the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Yes.
And I thought, hey, look at the variance. We just saw the Knicks come back from 17 down. These games kind of turned themselves around.
Yeah.
I don't expect the Thunder to go anywhere. They're going to come back and win. And I texted you and I said, do the Thunder have a Spurs problem? And right. Your answer was, maybe.
I think so. And I've bet them twice in the three games that they lost. So I'm coming late to the party. But the Spurs have something in their defense that really puts the Thunder at a loss. I mean, it's the first two games, Shea was great, and the rest of the Thunder couldn't keep up. Now Shea was kind of strained in this game. Offensively, they're 20th the last 2 weeks, the Thunder are. I know it's a small sample size, but this team was top five in every category for month after month after month. And I think a lot of it is three of the games were against the Spurs, and that the fact that they won with Victor Wembanyama coming off the bench. It's I have a 30-1 ticket for the Spurs to win the championship I got a couple weeks ago. I really have to add them to the small circle of teams along with the Nuggets and the Rockets that have a chance at this thing. By the way, no Eastern teams have a chance at this thing. Not even your
Knicks. not even the
Zero Knicks. Teams are. That's like an exhibition after the final is the NBA final.
Spurs are 16-1 right now to win the NBA right. title.
Got some CLV, I'll take it.
To win the Western Conference, the Spurs are plus 950, the fourth favorite.
Man, think about that. So it's 950 to win the Western Conference, but 16 to 1 to win the championship. So much less than double the payout. Even still, I think it's more likely you might as well bet them to win the championship, because if they get past the Thunder, they're going to be favored in the finals.
Yeah, because then you can just cash out and still probably make more than your plus 950 by the time you get to a couple of games there in the NBA finals. Wemby after the game was asked about did they have something schematically. And he was very coy. He's like, I'm not going to say anything. We have picked up on stuff, but they're not going to say anything, because he's like, this is a team that we're going to face in the playoffs. This, to me, was a playoff-type game, just like it was in the NBA Cup.
Yeah.
And more so than it was maybe 2 days ago when they were in San Antonio.
Yeah, I think winning in Oklahoma City by itself is a feat. They were 70% ATS at home the last two seasons going back. So they're like a good team all the time, but almost unbeatable at home. And not only to win, but to make it a laugher in the fourth quarter. Yeah, I think Victor does have some tricks up his long sleeves there.
Warriors beat the Mavericks 126-116. Steph Curry, you and I, we both love Steph Curry to go over his player points prop. He finished with 23 points, but he could not have started this game any colder. He finishes 6 of 18 shooting, but he started the game like 1 of 8. Like 1 of 7, 1 of 8. For some reason, just the shots weren't falling early for Curry. But thankfully, his teammates picked him up. Jimmy Butler finished with 14 points, 9 rebounds, 9 assists, and the Warriors improved to 16-15 on the season.
Yeah, I think Curry's efficiency obviously is correlated to them winning. But I think him being just a high-volume option is why they were able to win this one evenly, and why I have optimism for them in the Western Conference playoffs. He scored 4 points his first Christmas Day game against the Clippers 10 years ago. He scored 4 points the next game. And you could say, okay, I guess he's just bad on Christmas. The numbers show it. I think that's just, if you just look at any sample size of Steph Curry, that's the magic of him. He's not going to play differently when the shots aren't falling and the teams aren't going to respect him any less. So they made it a up and down affair, but the Warriors didn't miss a beat with Curry missing early.
I have real betting FOMO on the next game, because I wanted to go with LeBron points to go under. He finished with 18 points in 32 minutes. The Rockets beat the Lakers 119-96.
Betting FOMO is my best bet. You didn't follow the Rockets?
I bet the Rockets, okay, yes, right. But I wanted to bet LeBron to go under. Maybe I could have built the same game parlay. Who knows?
Yeah, Luka underworked.
Luka finished with 25 points here. Was this more about the Lakers losing this game, or were you impressed with the Rockets' ability to bounce back from their loss to the Clippers to get a win here?
As much as I like the Rockets, I think they're just as good as the Nuggets as far as second tier in the championship odds. This is more to do with the Lakers. Since LeBron has come back, they haven't been the team that they were before. I know the record 19-10, still fourth in the West. But the fact that he's still -4 per 100 possessions. Like last year, they were good all the time, but when he was in the game, they were like 50-50. It makes sense that he plays some of the harder minutes, some of the harder lineups. Now they're just not offensively threatening. They scored 88 versus the Clippers, despite LeBron having a big game. They scored 96 versus the Rockets, despite Luka having 25. I don't think they have three options. I think they have Luka that's playing as well as ever, MVP candidate, and then they got to figure out how can we make ancillary pieces around them. And that's a tough conversation to have, and I don't think they've had it, and I think it's showing up in their play, lost the last three ATS.
Yeah, and LeBron, a minus 33 on the floor. here in this game. Real quick, Nikola Jokic goes off in the first half for the Nuggets against the Timberwolves. I know the MVP debate is something that we can always put Jokic in that conversation.
What are the latest odds, though, with that Thunder loss? They got to be more up in the air.
Well, I'm going to give it to you here. Right. So I said, I know we could talk about Jokic all the time in the MVP conversation, yeah, but SGA has been that great. The thing with SGA, who is the favorite at plus 110, Jokic plus 170 is the second favorite, is that SGA has put up all these points and is still averaging such a high points per game where he doesn't play in the fourth quarter.
Right.
And so I think you have to almost look at his numbers and evaluate it differently just because the fact that he's missing the extra time and still putting it, it's almost like you have to look at his numbers per minute or per 100 possessions as opposed to a per game.
Yeah, there's two guards in NBA history that have scored a point per minute so far. SGA has done this season, and Michael Jordan did it in the 80s a couple times before he was more of a team player when he was doing everything himself. So it's absolutely freakish to do it. To do it on a 70-win pace team, it's unheard of. So I think SGA is arguably the best player in the world. And if you look at offensively, Chet's having a pretty kind of a down year. Jalen Williams has come back and they've lost their last three or three of the last four. He's only scoring 18 points per game. The fact that they're a top five offense, there's not of other places to look. There's AJ Mitchell. Mm-hmm. There's like their 3-point shooters. They don't have a lot of other players, but Shea brings them from a good defensive team to a good all-around team.
He's Mackenzie Rivers, NBA handicapper from RJ Bell's Dream Preview and BetterDay.com. We'll get his thoughts on the Friday slate of NBA games. Want to remind you, if you're looking for the perfect holiday gift or a smarter way to bet the biggest games of the season, VSiN's holiday special gives you VSiN Pro access through May 1st for just $79. You'll get all the daily best bets, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app, all of our betting guides for the college football playoff, all the way through the Super Bowl, everything that we have. Give yourself the gift of smarter betting today. Go to vsin.com/subscribe.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. VSiN Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with VSiN Pro.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back here on Cashing Out, I'm Scott Seidenberg with you on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. We hope you had a very Merry Christmas out there. Hopefully a safe Christmas with your family, friends, and loved ones. And maybe a profitable Christmas when it comes to betting the NBA and the NFL. I'm joined in studio by NBA handicapper Mackenzie Rivers from RJ Bell's Dream Preview Podcast. And the website is BetterDay.com. Mackenzie's got an NBA model that he's building, running all these picks and all the data points and whatnot. It's pretty impressive stuff that you've been up to here, Mac. We talked about all the games on Christmas. Now I want to get to some of the games here on Friday's schedule to see if you like any plays or if there's any value you see on the betting board. Let's start with a couple of ones that jump off the page to me, at least. We got the Bucks at the Grizzlies. Memphis laying 5.5 at home here against what has been a disappointing Milwaukee team, 4-10 away from Milwaukee this season.
Two teams going in opposite directions for the same reason. The Grizzlies have been the most better than year-to-date team the last 30 days. Is they're 15 points better than they have been. What happened 30 days ago? Well, that's about the time Ja Morant was taken out of the lineup. So Jaren Jackson Jr., Cam Spencer, they don't have Zach Edey right now, but some of the youthful, more optimistic Grizzlies are starting to shine. And then you look at Milwaukee, who about less than 30 days ago are one of the worst teams since their year-to-date, which is when they lost Giannis. They were a team that had a punter's chance at an NBA playoff run, which is Giannis is going to be Superman, and we're going to make 45% of our threes. We got a bunch of three-point shooters like A.J. Green and Ryan Rollins that are probably below average NBA players, but they make a lot of threes. Well, now they don't have the guy that's getting them any open threes, and they have one of the more disappointing offenses in the league. I think that's how you keep pace with Memphis, is to score a lot of points that they won't be able to do.
Okay. The Phoenix Suns are at the New Orleans Pelicans. Phoenix, a 3.5-point road favorite here, McKenzie. And what has Phoenix done that has impressed you so much? Because I know that they've been, like, they're doing this whole full-court press thing, yep, where it almost looks like a college game that you're watching. Like, they're picking up guys full-court press, and they're not stopping into the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
So has this worked for them this season?
Yeah, they've been one of the most successful teams, ATS, so just versus expectations. Them and the Pelicans were actually supposed to win a similar number of games. And then, look, Pelicans now 3.5-point home dogs versus the Suns team. They both have one star. Well, what's different? The Pelicans fired their coach, Willie Green, who didn't seem to have the keys or the groceries to, you know, put something together. Where the Suns, with their new coach, are a great example of how you can be more than the sum of your parts. They lost talent from last year. They lost Bradley Beal. They lost Kevin Durant. The guys that they're starring now, like Colin Gillespie, they had on the team, but they didn't have the roles that they do now and the coordination. They kind of pioneered this new defense that we see across the league, which is, we're going to play our guys like Louisville, Rick Pitino in the early 2000s, full court press, and we're just going to play them less. We're just going to have 10, 12 guys that can play this style, because we know no guy can do it for 40 minutes a game. We don't have to. It's not like there's a huge difference between our third best guy and our eighth best guy anyway. So that's what they're doing.
Suns, this season, they are 16-13 straight up. They're 19-10 ATS, one of the best, as you mentioned, ATS teams in the NBA. First quarter this season, 18-11 ATS for the Suns. So maybe the idea of the pressing early kind of disrupts the opposition's offense early on in these games.
Yeah, I would love to look at them the first time they play a team versus if teams improve after a while. We saw Miami have a brand new offensive style that no one had seen before, and it worked for about 2 months, and they've won one game in December. So we could see these things reverse if they start to get figured out by the other people watching tape.
I'm just looking real quick here at their opponents. So we mentioned first quarter, they're 18-11. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. This is good. 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 of those games, which is interesting because they've covered 18
of them. They've covered 18, yeah.
18 of those games, the opponent has gone under their first quarter team total.
Right. So that completely validates the theory. They are shocked by the approach.
So the 18 covers maybe not so much them scoring so much in the first quarter, but their defense limiting the opposition, as indicative by, as I just counted, 18 times the opponent's team total has gone under.
And we saw this Tuesday night versus the Lakers. When you have an older team, by the way, that presses the least because they don't want that action, they don't want that smoke, they just seem to be caught off by the youthful exuberance of the Suns.
Another team that has some pretty interesting home road splits, as I heard earlier, Doug Kazarian was on with VSiN Primetime with Matt Eumanns and Will Hill, and he was talking about the Utah Jazz, how different they are at home versus on the road. Yeah. And if you look at their ATS numbers and if you look at their over-under numbers, it's dramatic, like at home versus on the road. This is a team you want to back at home, and maybe you want to go over at home. They're 9.5-point dogs against the Pistons in Salt Lake City coming up here on Friday.
I love this trend. In the first half, the Jazz are 14-3 to the over. At home, on the road, that same play, over in the first half, is only 5-7. And you know the great better now commenter a little out there, Haralabob Valgaris?
Mm-hmm.
He actually made his money, his millions, with this specific trend of first half totals in the Jazz game. And over the years, well, when he was betting, it was under with Darren Williams, the way they were playing super slow. And now we're seeing over. But what is the commonality? The Jazz have the most distinct, the best home court advantage in the NBA. So if you're seeing these trends that are particularly strong home and road in Utah, it's not just that it's happening to any team. It's happening to a team that, because of their volume, because of their altitude, because of how they're scheduled with, compared to other teams, they've been the most jarring reaction. Other teams haven't been able to catch up with that. So if they're playing a different style, other teams might adopt that style and not be able to impose their will as much. So the Pistons, more of a defensive team under J.B. Bickerstaff, but they just want to win. We've seen them play the Wizards in very high-scoring games. I think they'll go into Utah and be like, all right, you're running. I guess we're going to have to run, and they're going to win, but they're going to go over.
Yeah, and a lot of, as you mentioned, like the way the schedule works out with the teams that are going to Utah, a lot of the time it could be you're going from Denver going to Denver.
Yep.
You know, so depending on like how that schedule is built, like I look at it now in the NHL ever since the Phoenix Coyotes went and became the Utah Mammoth, terrible name, but I prefer hockey club. But right. I always look at it now like when you look at these back to backs, like usually these teams are going from Vegas to Utah or Utah to Vegas or Denver to Utah, Utah to Denver. So I think it's interesting in the NBA, it's a similar situation.
Not to be cynical or be talking about small markets or anything, but there's a reason they schedule the games they do that are back-to-back. They don't schedule Lakers-Rockets back-to-back. They schedule the games that teams are kind of overlooking, that are kind of scheduled losses, are the second night in Utah, so they're not as accustomed or they're not bought in to thinking it's a really big game, so they kind of take a second, they kind of let the Jazz dictate terms.
Scheduled losses, we love that in the NBA, even though Adam Silver says we are going to try to avoid this.
Every team's the same. Every team's the same. We don't care. We just want the Lakers and the Knicks in the finals. That's the only thing we care about.
You have the Clippers against the Blazers in Portland. Right now, it looks like the Clippers, 1.5 to 2 point favorites. Clippers coming off of that impressive win against the Rockets.
Yep.
But in that game, was this a sustainable way to win basketball games when you have Kawhi Leonard and Harden combining for 70 points?
Well, you're not going to ask for that. But you have two superstars paying them $90 million a year, or $110 million, depending on whose books you're looking at every year, for a reason. And this team has just underperformed so much, despite the fact that Harden's having a good year, and Kawhi Leonard, when he's playing, has been the same Kawhi Leonard that we've known and loved, averaging 37 over the last two games with wins over the Rockets and with the Lakers. I think the Clippers are finally turning it around. They have the coach. They have the two superstars. If they win this game, they are only 2.5 games out of the 10th spot for that play-in. One of the teams they are going to leapfrog is the Blazers, and I think they're going to get there because, again, we have two teams moving in the opposite direction. And the way to beat the Clippers, the Blazers just don't have any players like that. None of their guards have worked out. Shaedon Sharpe's more of a forward. Danny Avdija, great player, maybe the most improved player, a forward. I don't think they have the speed that's really kept the Clippers off guard. Because I think the reason the Clippers are where they are is because the pace of the NBA is just 10 possessions more than anyone thought it was going to be. And they built their team on old, veteran, plodding players. A lot of teams can take advantage of that versus the Clippers. I don't think the Blazers can. I would like the Clippers -2.
McKenzie, we got about a minute left. Coach of the year, JB Bickerstaff is the favorite at +200. Mitch Johnson of the Spurs +330 as the second favorite. Is that the guy that wins the award for you?
Mitch Johnson, 100%. We've seen this story with JB Bickerstaff. You get a player, you get a group of guys that are talented, young. You could say, okay, play a little defense, and they play a little defense, they win 50 games, and then they get bounced in the first round of the playoffs. What Mitch Johnson is doing, literally everyone else in the league is trying to do, and no one's figured it out. Slow down the Thunder, be able to maintain your offense against the Thunder and not let them run. Bringing Wemby off the bench is such a bold move. Mitch Johnson has taken a team that should win 35 games, and they're going to win 60, and they could actually beat the Thunder in the playoffs. Most impressive job in a couple years for Coach of the Year, for sure.
And
give me that.
+330, and we'll see if Wemby plays enough games to qualify for some of these postseason award markets. He's Mackenzie Rivers. Check him out on Twitter, @MackinRivers. You can listen to him on RJ Bell's Dream Preview podcast. The website is betterday.com. Mack, great stuff. Good luck with your NBA bets coming up here tomorrow.
Appreciate you, man.
I'm Scott Sadenberg, always on Twitter, @ScottsOnAir. More cashing out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
That's Sadenberg back here with you. This is Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. You guys can always hit me up on Twitter @ScottsOnAir, @VSiN Live. You can join us all on the network as we recap what we saw here on Christmas Day. take a look ahead to the weekend. My thanks to Mackenzie Rivers, who joined me in our previous two segments. We broke down the NBA Christmas Day slate that we saw here today, and we previewed some best bets coming up here for NBA on Friday, as we have a pretty decent slate of games here on Friday in the NBA. We also have three bowl games in college football as bowl season continues. We will get to that coming up here in a little bit. Let's see if we can ride that momentum from our cashing of the Hawaii money line miraculously and the over in that Hawaii bowl on Christmas Eve. We'll see if we can now cash some bowl bets here on Friday the 26th. But let's talk NFL. The NFL's three-game Christmas Day slate did not necessarily deliver. The first game was exciting, for sure, with the Dallas Cowboys and the Washington Commanders. Dallas winning a high-scoring affair. The only game of the day that went over, and it barely went over, total was 51, and despite the first half having 34 points, this game finished 30-23, the Cowboys winning. And with that first half going over, by the way, the Cowboys are now 15-1 to the over in the first half this season. 15-1 to the first half going over. Josh Johnson at quarterback for the Washington Commanders held his own, 15 of 23 passing, 198 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions. This was about Bill. Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt, 11 carries, 105 yards and two touchdowns, and the bulk of it coming on one 72-yard run. We cashed a prop in this one. We talked about how Von Miller needing two sacks to get to his contract incentive. And usually I'm not a guy now that, you know, looks at these contract incentives in week 17 or so. But when a guy needs two sacks and you can get a plus 330 price on him to get a sack, I figured let's take a shot. And we do cash that. If you were somebody that was buying into the contract incentive stuff and played the Deebo Samuel receiving yards to go over, he does go over two catches, though. Come on. You couldn't have foreseen that happening. Two catches for 68 yards for Deebo. He had a catch and run on a screen pass for 41 yards. So Deebo does go over his receiving yardage prop, which does earn him his contract incentive. We'll obviously pay close attention to some of the games coming up here for this weekend, but more so next weekend. And we have to be diligent with this stuff because the sportsbooks tax you on these props with these contract incentives becoming so public everywhere now. For Dallas, this was a rushing mismatch that was identified in my weekly trench report that I do each and every weekly means I do it each and every week, but I do it. I release it on my website on Wednesdays. I talk about it here on Cashing Out when I host on Saturday nights. We go through the top five overall mismatches. We go through the games that are the closely lined games where I don't think either team has the edge over the opposition, which in those games, you take the points, by the way. And in one of those games for this week was actually here on Christmas, where the Dallas Cowboys and Washington Commanders in my trench report was only, it was a very, very close lined game. And in a game like that, you take the points. Well, you took the points with the Commanders, you covered. But Washington versus Dallas was identified as one of my rushing mismatches of the week in favor of the Dallas Cowboys. And so what that means is I always play the running back one to go over. Sometimes I play both the running back one and the RB2 to go over their rushing prop. Well, Javonte Williams had 13 carries for 54 yards. He gets banged up with a shoulder injury. And Malik Davis, the backup, comes in, 20 carries for 103 yards. The Cowboys ran for 211 yards as a team in this game. They absolutely took advantage of the rushing mismatch. They win, don't cover though, 30-23. Dallas playing hard here, even though their season's over, still playing hard here. How does this look now moving forward into their final game of the season, which will be at the New York Giants, with both teams having nothing to play for? For the Commanders, this was a spot that I liked backing them because they were home here. Final home game of the year, playing against a division rival, playing on a holiday, trying to show something, trying to prove that, yes, they're down to their third-string quarterback, but this is a team that still has some fight left in them. And they fought here in this game. Give them credit. Do we think it's going to be the same when they go to Philadelphia next week to take on the Eagles, who might be playing for playoff positioning? Might. I say might because we don't know, obviously, We'll see what happens and how this week plays out to see if the Eagles, where they could be positioned here, if they have a chance to move into the two seed. Because the Bears do play the 49ers. Chicago right now 11-4. The Eagles are 10-5. Eagles win, Bears lose. All of a sudden, the Eagles, both teams are at 11-5. And yes, there is a chance for the Eagles to get to the two seed, even though the Eagles lost to the Bears, so the Bears would have the tiebreaker. But that's what I mean. It comes down to week 18, where you can have a situation in week 18 where the Eagles are playing for something. So we'll see if Washington continues to or wants to play a spoiler role in week number 18. Your second game was an absolute embarrassment by both teams, really. And maybe I shouldn't say embarrassment because the Vikings played hard defensively. They really did. 6 turnovers, though, for the Detroit Lions. Absolutely unacceptable. Jared Goff, 18 of 29, 197 yards, a touchdown, 2 interceptions, a couple of fumbles there, 3 fumbles, actually. Jahmyr Gibbs fumbled also. And the Vikings win 23-10 in a game in which they had less than 2 yards per play. If you take away the one long 65-yard rushing touchdown by Jordan Addison with 3 minutes remaining in this game that cost me my best bet of the day, which was the Minnesota Vikings team total to go under. Max Brosmer, 9 of 16 passing for 51 yards, but he was sacked 7 times for 48 yards, meaning the Vikings finished this game with 3 net passing yards. 3 net passing yards. I believe there was a trend that Will Hill talked about on VSiN Primetime earlier where the Vikings became the first team to win a football game in which they had this few passing yards and, you know, didn't have any yards, any production on offense. They scored 23 points with 3 passing yards. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. But 65-yard run by Jordan Addison goes over their team total, and the Vikings get a win here, eliminating the Detroit Lions. If I told you this year, and let's go back, I don't know, how many weeks you want to go back. We could start with the beginning of the season, but we can also just go at any point in the season. If I told you the Detroit Lions would finish with a worse record than the Minnesota Vikings, you would say what? That is what could happen here. Both teams are now 8-8. The Lions will go to the Bears in week 18 to try and play a spoiler role. The Minnesota Vikings will be home against the Green Bay Packers, where the Packers they're just going to be locked. They might not have anything to play for. So this could be a fun situation where the Vikings get a win here in week 18 against the Green Bay Packers, who are locked into their playoff positioning, and you have the Lions maybe losing to a Bears team that is playing for the 2 seed. How crazy is this? Maybe even the 1 seed for the Bears. Who knows? What would the odds have been at whatever point you want to say during the season that the Vikings would have a better record than the Detroit Lions? But that could absolutely happen here in week 18. And then there was the nightcap where Chris Oladukun tried to keep the Kansas City Chiefs competitive. And for the most part, he did. Maybe not so much because of what he did. 13 of 22 passing, just 66 yards and 1 touchdown. But because the Broncos just don't put anybody away. The Broncos win ugly football games, and this was another ugly football game that they won. 20-13 was the final. Bo Nix, 26 of 38 passing, 182 yards, a touchdown, and an interception. The Chiefs, for Oladukun, by the way, his passing prop was around 150 yards or so, and there were many people that were saying, go over, it's like too low. This is now the 7th game this season that the Denver Broncos have held the opposing quarterback under 150 passing yards. 66 yards for Chris Oladukun in this game. The question now is, was this the last time that the Chiefs fans at Arrowhead saw Travis Kelce in a Chiefs uniform?
only get a few of those where you just get to stand there and appreciate 60 to 70,000 Chiefs fans screaming for you. So I always embrace that moment, man. It's fun. And hopefully I got everybody fired up for it. No, the only time it ever crossed my mind is I was driving in the other day and I saw how much the Powerball was. And I was like, man, if I could just win that, I wouldn't have to work another day in my life.
That's what's keeping you here?
No, man. Honestly, I've been just focused on trying to win football games, man. I let that be a decision that I make with my family, friends, the Chiefs organization, when the time comes.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Scott Soderberg back here with you, cashing out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Always on Twitter at Scott's On Air and at VSiN Live. So Travis Kelce with some comments after the game, after the Chiefs loss, not really talking about his future. The one thing that stirred up a lot of conversation online on social media was after Patrick Mahomes got hurt and Travis Kelce did his podcast with his brother and was talking about Mahomes' injury. And every time he referenced the Chiefs, he never said we or us. He referred to them as the Chiefs. So he would say things like, well, the Chiefs are hoping that he's back for week one. Or if Mahomes is back for week number one and he's healthy, the Chiefs will be fine and they'll bounce back. And I don't know if it was Travis Kelce just getting into that whole media practice mindset where, like, hey, I'm a podcast host, I'm being neutral, right? And next year when I retire and I get hired to do what Greg Olson's doing and be in the booth, like, I can't say we, us. So maybe he's just trying to prepare himself, or he was letting people know that he doesn't plan to be here next year, that he's retiring. And that could be the case. And maybe it was. And if it was, then this is the last time that he will be playing a home game for the Chiefs. And maybe that was a reason why you wanted to go out there and you wanted to bet any Travis Kelce props. The problem is, you had Chris Oladokun at quarterback. Kelce did lead the team with 5 catches for 36 yards. Led the team with 6 targets, but again, 5 catches for 36 yards. The Kansas City Chiefs will end their season at the Raiders in a game where I have no idea. How much do you think tickets are going to be here at Allegiant Stadium in Vegas for that game? Vegas is a destination, and Allegiant Stadium does draw a great crowd. It's a great stadium. It really is. I've gone to Raider games there. I've gone to UNLV games there. It's great. But Raiders hosting the Kansas City Chiefs in week 18 with Chris Oladokun at quarterback for the Chiefs. I mean, maybe Chiefs fans, you know, because it might be the last time you see Travis Kelce play. Maybe people are hoping that Taylor Swift will be in the crowd and they'll show her. I don't know. Just feels like a clunker of a game that we have coming up here for week number 18. Not so many clunkers, well, quite a few, but we do have some good matchups coming up here for week 17 in the NFL. And it starts, or it continues, with 2 games on Saturday, one which will feature 1 backup quarterback, likely, maybe 2, who knows. But the Houston Texans will take on the Chargers. That is your first game here on Saturday, and there is something on the line for both of these teams. The Chargers are still chasing the Denver Broncos for the division. If the Chargers win, they will improve to 12-4. The game next week at the Broncos will be for the division, because the Chargers beat the Broncos earlier this season. If they win again, both teams would be 13-4, and the Chargers would win the AFC West. And then it's just a matter of what happens. Maybe the Chargers get the 1 seed or the 2 seed. We'll see how it plays out here with the Patriots and whatnot over the next over the last 2 weeks of the season. So the Chargers still have something to play for, trying to win the division. The Houston Texans also trying to win their division. The Texans take on the Chargers here this weekend, and then the Colts in week 18. If the Colts can beat the Jacksonville Jaguars. And that's a big if, but if the Colts can beat the Jaguars, there is a chance that in week 18, a Texans win over the Colts wins them the division. Or I guess the Jaguars, well, yeah, because if the Jaguars win, they would have a 12th win. Houston can get 12 wins. I guess the Jaguars could lose to the Titans in week 18. But then again, it's the Titans. So the best chance is probably Phillip Rivers here and the Indianapolis Colts, who are playing for, they are playing for a chance to make the playoffs in that week 18 game, only if the Texans lose, though. However, Phillip Rivers has come out and said that even if the Texans win, which would eliminate the Indianapolis Colts, then he is still planning on playing because he said it's not going to be fair to just throw Riley Leonard into the mix after not prepping all week. Phillip Rivers is planning to be the starting quarterback of the Indianapolis Colts coming up here on Sunday, regardless of the outcome of that Texans-Chargers game. However, I have concerns. If the Texans win and it eliminates the Indianapolis Colts, what is, you know, what's the motivation for Indy here to even, is it just because it's a home game and you want to give Rivers like a swan song? You want to give him one more game here? Your final home game of the year against the Jaguars? Heck, if you can't make the playoffs, maybe you can at least play the spoiler role and try and make the division interesting going into week number 18. Try and get it to a point where it comes down to the final week and tiebreakers and whatnot. That, because that would be the only thing that the Colts have to play for. But then think about this. If the game gets out of hand, if the Jaguars take, I don't know, if the Jaguars go up three scores, is Phillip Rivers staying in the game? Or are the Colts going to protect him and maybe he protects himself and then he doesn't play? Or he comes out of the game, you know, comes out of the game. Because Rivers is only playing here because the Colts had a chance to make the playoffs. That's the only reason why Phillip Rivers is playing. If the Colts were eliminated from postseason contention 3 weeks ago, they're not bringing Phillip Rivers in to play quarterback. Riley Leonard plays quarterback for them. And I know Riley Leonard was banged up, but Riley Leonard plays quarterback for them, right? You don't see the Kansas City Chiefs, who are eliminated from postseason contention, trying to bring in somebody to replace Chris Oladokun. You don't see the Vikings trying to bring in somebody instead of Max Brosmer. Yes, there's bad quarterback play here in the NFL, but that's because these teams are eliminated from postseason contention. Same thing, Josh Johnson for the Commanders, right? These teams are eliminated. If the Colts were eliminated, Rivers doesn't play. And the only reason Rivers continued to play after the first loss was because they weren't eliminated going into that second game. Now the only reason why he's prepping to play here in a third consecutive game is because technically they are still alive. But once Houston wins, I just wonder, and that's a big if, because there it might as well be a pick 'em. It's a 1.5-point spread right now, and we know that the Chargers have no home field advantage. But if the Texans win, I just wonder what is the motivation for both Phillip Rivers and Shane Steichen to have him play the entirety of the game. Yes, I think he still starts. He has told us as much that he's still going to start the game. Because I agree, it is not fair to throw Riley Leonard, a rookie who is still learning this league, to throw in after not practicing with the ones all week just because you find out the day before that your season is over. But I think he could play the second half. So I think Phillip Rivers starts. If the game is competitive and the Colts are winning or they're within range, Rivers stays in the game. But if the game gets out of hand, if the Jaguars take a three-score lead, if this is a 21-3 game in the third quarter, is Rivers still in the game? If it's 27-10, is Rivers still in the game? I think there is a very good possibility that we don't see Rivers play in the fourth quarter of this game. So you can look at the player props. He had a monster first half in that last game flying over his passing prop. Does that happen again here against the Jacksonville Jaguars? And does it happen again if he doesn't play the majority of this game? Again, but that only happens if the Texans win and if the Jaguars get off to a good start. There is correlations to play here in week number 17. Money line parlay correlations, even spread correlations that you can play based off of one result happening and the likelihood of another result happening. The only issue is the sports books are catching on to this. And some of them are not letting you make what is, in my opinion, a great bet here for week 17. I'll tell you about that bet coming up next. But reaching people is easy. Reaching the right people, we know, is everything. And Mission Media is going to help your brand do exactly that. Their cross-platform strategies hit fans wherever they're watching or listening. Podcasts, connected TVs, streaming, digital, all of it. And because Mission Media is the exclusive advertising partner for VSiN, that means you get direct access to one of the most loyal, engaged, and bet-ready sports audiences in the country. These are fans who respond, engage, and convert. So if you want your message in front of people who actually take action, Mission Media makes it happen. Visit vsin.com/advertise.